We warmly welcome Carla as our speaker for this Monday Night Crew Miracles meeting on April 6th. When you speak, it is considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted on oafootsteps.com as a podcast. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or an alias when you share. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. And Carla, I'll pass it over to you.
Well, thanks. Thanks for asking me. I'm pretty excited. My name's Carla. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I've let's see. I have an abstinence date of January 25th of 2019. I'm down about 135 pounds from my top weight of 333 pounds. And I'm here today to share my life-changing experience, strength, and hope that I found in this amazing program of recovery and how grateful I am to still be alive. So my experience is regarding my disease and what happened. My strength comes from my willingness to keep coming back to this program no matter what, and my hope comes from relying on a higher power of my own understanding. Let's start with my experience. I have no idea when I went from being a normal kid to being the fat kid. So my family pictures told me I was overweight at 9 when my family photo showed me to be the fat kid next to my fat mom and my skinny rest of the family. I remember getting to order two cheeseburgers as a two cheeseburgers at a time on our once a month night out. I started to get teased by kids at school and at home by my brother, who had once been my best friend. At 9, I remember considering the knives in the kitchen, which one I would use to end my life, because I just didn't feel like I fit in. I was a very depressed 9-year-old. I believed I left childhood behind at that point and spent the next long while through my teenage years in depression and anxiety. I mentally left the church of my childhood and became a closet atheist until the anxiety got the better of me in my 20s. I remembered the love and the warmth I had experienced at church, and I turned back to God in the sky faith at that time and became a passionate but pretty faithless church member. I originally came into program sometime around 1989. I was a single working chick who had been overweight forever, with a top weight at the time of 220 pounds. I made some changes in my mid-20s and lost a little bit of weight, got my first boyfriend, and that ended in disaster like 6 months later. I became deeply depressed and I knew I would die if I didn't look after myself. So I started working out, lost a lot of the excess weight, but on a European vacation with a girlfriend, I started eating crazy again. And that really scared me. I really liked the way I looked. I was not thin, but I certainly looked better than I did at 220 pounds. I had a good social life and a lot to lose. And I came to OA the first time at about 29 years old. So that would have been 1989, and found my people there. I took a 1 year CHIP. It was the how portion of the program, which was very strict. I had a how sponsor. I had the how food plan, that told you how many curls of carrots you could have. I did the how 12 steps with the how 4-step inventory with my sponsor. I gave that inventory away to her in step 5, and at that point, it's kind of a blur. I don't know that I did any more steps after that because I met him in the rooms. I was on a losing abstinence. We were unified on the how food plan. We were satisfied. It was enough food. I didn't listen to my sponsor who told me not to get into a relationship. What did she know? He was in program. What's the problem? And I never really made a decision to quit OA. I let other areas of my life crowd it out. So I've been a lifelong human doing rather than a human being in the preparations for the wedding, and then we had ex-wife issues, and then we started having kids, and then the job market started changing and we had job transitions and relocations. I lost any focus I had had on self-care. I was consumed with caring for everyone else around me, and that was to my own devastation. So meetings became optional, and then they became just too hard to fit in. There was less and less time to prep food. I let the monster back into my life with a vengeance. So, because eating was somehow all bundled into self-pity and indulgent love and self-hate, I ate my way to 333 pounds. I had trouble finding clothes. I had to use handicap stalls in restrooms, and I'll change my background picture. I do have, a picture of myself at that time. So this was basically how I spent a huge portion of my adult life, was right around 300 pounds, and that was give or take, 20 pounds. My high weight was 333, and I think even this picture is down a little bit from that. And it came with all of the things I needed it, seatbelt extenders in cars and on the planes, that walk of shame, when the waitress is going, the waitress, the stewardess is going, "Here it is, I've got your, extender. Oh, thanks." My knees were becoming arthritic. My feet were collapsing from the pressure. My blood sugar crossed over 200 fasting, and at one point it was 295 fasting. I was so proud of being pre-diabetic for so long. I was pre-diabetic for years, and then at some point, it crossed over. It really turned on me. My mother was a insulin-dependent diabetic, and I used to pride myself that I was not, I at least I didn't need insulin, but I saw that I was headed in that direction. I did raise my children to eat compulsively, and our family of four, all adults, by 2016 had the Roux-en-Y bariatric surgery. And I knew it was a stopgap measure for diabetes. It was not a cure for my insanity around food. At the back of my mind, through the entire process of that surgery, I knew OA was my only hope, and OA I knew was the last house on the block. So let me change back. There we go. So the surgery prep gave me some focus, and in the prep for the surgery, I lost about 75 pounds in all. But it also seemed to give me free rein to eat what I felt like. And I could now eat huge, huge amounts of sugar, and simple carbs, while my blood sugar stayed rock solid at 100. And it's kind of funny because yesterday was 10 years since I had that surgery. 10 years. Of course, there came a day where when I couldn't eat what I wanted, and I started to watch my blood sugar creep back up. It took a while, but eventually, over the next 2 years, I had gained 30 of the 75 pounds back, and my blood sugars were well on the way back to the diabetic range. At that point, I was 244 pounds, and my blood sugars were running about 144. My A1C never had even a chance to resolve, so it didn't matter. I had this incredible disruption going on at home with family members spiraling in another addiction, and I was trapped eating to try to feel better. It didn't matter that this never helped. I felt at the time that I was so beset on all sides that I didn't deserve to have my food taken away. I didn't deserve to have, to be without that comfort of the food. There came a point where I realized it was absolutely killing me. I was terrified to realize that even in the face of that, I could not stop. I knew it was time to go for the only real help I'd ever found, and that was back to OA. Even then, it took me months. I had a moment of clarity at home, and I walked back into an OA meeting on January 4th of 2019, 26 years after I had walked away. That was my experience. My strength is how the program turned my life around. So this time I came in with the gift of desperation, and this time I knew where this path was leading. That long, slow, debilitating death that we choose to face or choose to ignore rather than to recover. I made a decision to set aside everything my engineering college-educated brain knew, and I opened my ears to whatever you guys had to tell me. And I listened like my life depended on it because it did. I heard for the first time that food was cunning, baffling, and powerful, that without help it was too much for me, that acceptance is the answer to all, really all, my problems today. That little Friday meeting that I started with, they accepted me, they had hope for me, they listened to my struggles, they saw my tears on January 25th. I told them I was not able to stay abstinent. I could not stay out of the sugar. I was in off the binging from sugar that always happened every year from October when those or September when the Halloween candy hits the shelves through Christmas. This was January, and I was in tears because I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop binging the sugar. One of the old timers in the meeting asked me if I was abstinent right then. Well, this was a noon meeting. I rarely, binged before noon anyway. So at that point, I was. It was noon. So yes, I was abstinent. She asked me for a plan for lunch. Huh. Here's an idea right then. And, told me that I needed a plan for dinner. And then she told me that all I had to do after that was make it to the pillow that night for day one. So it has now been, 7 years and what, 2 months? 3 months of no sugar. And it hasn't always been easy, but I can tell you today I couldn't care less about Portos or Yum Yum or any of those things that my fellow workers would rave about and put on their desks. And I'm pretty sure they would make me pretty sick if I ate some. We had Easter here. There's a plate of crap on our, in our living room right now, and it's not my crap. I don't eat it. So it doesn't bother me. I wish I could say I've been completely cured in every way since then, but I'd be lying. There are nuances to this disease that I continue to struggle with, being human and all, but I can tell you the closer I get to allowing my higher power reign in all my affairs, the better my self-knowledge, my honesty, and my program becomes. So now I'm going to talk about my hope, which is what I'm learning today. So I've gone through all 12 steps at least 4 times. I'm on the fifth time now, right now, on step 10. So I've had 3 different sponsors in the last 7 years, and it's different each time I go through the steps because each time I'm different. So each time I've experienced transformation in my mind while either maintaining or losing my weight, I'm down about 40 pounds, excuse me, 40 pounds since I walked in June of 2019. I've learned that I'm salvageable and worthy of being saved. I've learned that my obsession with fear was shutting me off from living my life and shutting me off from my higher power. I've learned that the love I need for my food is to nourish my body, not to feed my obsession. I've learned that each of my family members has their own higher power that is working with them on their recovery, and that it is not me. So, nor do I need to interfere with that higher power's work. I've learned that this life was meant to be faced on God's terms, not mine, and I have faith that whatever comes, we'll handle together. And this latest thing I've been learning is the role my ego plays, in my choices, that I think I'm so strong and wise, I can handle anything, usually without help. I can fix things myself. I don't for myself. Waste of time, because I am so strong. I am just so strong. So those are lies. These are lies I tell myself. So out of love, my higher power turns up the heat in my life and exposes those lies. So when I finally practice surrender that I'm not the only reliable source of good, orderly direction, I've been able to turn to appropriate avenues to help. So these are all things I missed the first time around in program. I have regrets over the 26 years it took me to get back here, and what a different life I would have had. What heartache and drama and good health it would have saved. Would my children be struggling as they do? That's a tough one. But one of the ninth step promises is that we'll not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. If I had learned to trust in my higher power and experience the serenity I have today because of it, I don't know that I would have let my program go. If I had learned to see myself as a precious child worthy of care, if I had learned the first time around that I was never meant to take on saving whoever needed saving, I don't know that I would have let my program go. And these days, my higher power is a constant moving force in my life. I can look at situations and choices that are disrupting me. I can pray the prayer that's found in the Overeaters Anonymous book, page 188. I trust you, God. I can't do this, but I know you can. Please help me. Then, like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, the right answers will come after we've done this for a while. So, I say this because I've had some really radical things going on in my life. Right now, for the fourth time in his life, my son is going blind, and he has a intracranial hypertension, and the pressure on his optic nerve gives him tunnel vision, and he loses his vision. So, it's wild. We're out here in Oklahoma, and we moved here from California. In California, we had radical doctors there that went to bat for us and fought to get lumbar punctures for him to relieve the pressure in his spine, and that has proven to restore his sight. So he goes for so long, and then it starts happening again. So this is the second time it's happened here in Oklahoma. In Oklahoma, we have doctors here that say you need a lumbar puncture, we'll get you a lumbar puncture. And they've done it, and they've seen the results of that it's opened up his sight again. So now we're actually pursuing a disability case for him because this is a crazy life. How can he work? He can't work when he's bedridden from a lumbar puncture. So, and there are other several things going on with that. We don't know if it's creating pain in his arms. He's having migraines. So, it's like he's 29 years old. He's too young for this stuff. This is a 45-year-old woman's disease. It's not for a 29-year-old. He had it the first time when he was 16. So, we have crazy things like that going on. My husband, having been sober for 5 years, took a deep dive back into alcoholism. And during that run, spent a lot of family money for rehab. And I figured, that's okay, because if we weren't going to have any money, that would be because God determined we didn't need any money and that God would take care of us. And this time around, it didn't send me into a tailspin. This time around, it was like, well, curiosity. Let's see how God's going to resolve this. Well, after he got out of rehab, he relapsed and fell down the stairs and suffered a traumatic brain injury. And that was now 6 months ago. He couldn't speak. He is an engineer. He's our network engineer. He's our plumber. He's our carpenter. He's our car mechanic. He's, everything around here. Gone. All of that was gone. My time is up. It's coming back. Who predicted that? Nobody predicted that. Nobody predicted that he would be driving. He drove this weekend. He's been mowing the lawn on our ride-on tractor. I mean, he helped my son build a computer. He actually built the computer for my son. So, you just don't see where the twists and turns are. And, I'm finding that this life of surrender, that accepting circumstances in every aspect is, it is so healing. It is so freeing to understand that we are operating in God's world, not the other way around. God's not operating in my world. I'm operating in God's world. I'm operating to his tune, and I am being led by the guidance there. And I never used to have this sense of peace and serenity that I do now. I always had fear. I always had resentments. I have zero fears these days. Once in a while, a resentment will kick up, and I know what to do with it now. I know I need to set it aside because that thing's going to drive me to eat. So, this program is amazing. It has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I continue to learn more and more about myself, and it has been a privilege to come and share my story with you. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much. Let's give our speaker, Carla, a big round of applause for a wonderful share. And now is the time to ask our speaker questions. As we're still recording, we ask that you put your questions in the chat and I will read them aloud. You're welcome to message them to me directly or to the group. We ask that you do not come off mute to ask your question or to thank the speaker verbally in this section, as we don't have permission to record other attendees. We'll allow up to 15 minutes for questions for our speaker, after which we'll have sharing until 15 minutes after the hour and then our parking lot. So I have some questions already in here. Thank you so much for your share, first of all, Carla, and for being here. The first question I have, did you ever get your surgery reversed, or did the malabsorption, or think of the malabsorption as a tool? How does it factor into your food plan and abstinence? Oh, weird, sorry.
I realized I couldn't unmute. No, I never did get it resolved. I never got it reversed. Some of the healing happened, and so I find that I get used to things. So I have gotten used to eating salads, and I eat plenty of raw vegetables now, and it's really not it hasn't been an issue. And I was eating pretty heavy volumes of stuff. It just wasn't like salad and chicken and things like that. But I've gotten to a point where I can certainly have the protein I need, the salads I need. So no, I did not have it reversed, and I probably won't. So it's
And with that, what advice would you give others in OA who have had bariatric surgery?
Well, I like when one person says that they operated on the wrong organ. They needed to operate on our brains instead of, It is a really, excuse me. For some reason, I have a frog in my throat. But we do have a really, really interesting disease, and it's something that you do have to deal with. And I've been thinking a lot lately about alcoholism versus, compulsive overeating. We say how, difficult it is to, because we have this tiger we take out of the cage, 3 times a day. But, alcoholics have a mandate to work on their defects or they'll drink again. I have a mandate to work on my defects or I will eat again. So really, the same problem that the alcoholics have with their defects, I have with my defects. The alcoholics with their defects will drink again. If I practice my defects, I will eat again. So we're in the same program essentially. So advice for bariatric surgery, it's not a cure. It's not a cure. You've got to get down to causes and conditions. You got to work the steps. You got to have a sponsor. You got to get to step 10, 11, 12, 10, 11, 12. When you're feeling like you need to eat, you need to get to a newcomer. You need to, open your phone and call up somebody, break the isolation. You need to get out and start being a human among humans, a friend among friends, because so many of us are isolators. I was such an isolator. I've always been afraid of people, and this is something I'm learning today. I was today years old when I realized that I really need to start reaching out to people that I have no idea. I have no idea how to do that. I don't know how to be a friend among friends, a worker among workers. So, you got to go after the defects or else you're going to eat again. So, that's my best advice. So, it's working the steps and especially get to that cycle of 10, 11, 12, 10, 11, 12, 10, 11, 12. So,
Thank you. And another one that came in. What fears did you have coming back in after 26 years?
say that again.
What fears did you have coming back in after 26 years?
Oh, we were, we had, from the minute I got married, we were chasing income. We were tech people in the middle of a tech boom, which then popped. The tech bubble popped, and it was a shrinking, shrinking, shrinking market. So every job we had was going away. So there were, so we would buy these houses with a mortgage to match a tech budget that we could no longer afford. So we were constantly trying to keep ahead, trying to make enough money to make ends meet to keep the kids fed. And so there was this constant fear of not having enough money, of being put on the street. And, I would have fears over, getting sick. I started, running fears at the back of my mind, like I would run movies, and what if, one of the children gets really sick? What if we lost one of our kids? What if I got really sick? What would my kids do without me? They couldn't possibly live without me. And I would play the movies of what that would be like. What if we get thrown out of our house? What if we get foreclosed on? And just imagining, living on the streets and, just I would torment myself with these constant fears, and that is, it became an obsession in my mind that fear was my go-to for everything. I would not allow my kids to, to be kids running the neighborhood because of fear. I had fears from way back of people breaking into the house and, what would I do? And, what if society unravels and there's rioting in the streets? I would have that level of, just really creative thinking about different fears. And My fear with my higher power, my fear with God was that I grew up with this concept of a loving God, and I did become an atheist at one point, but my fear of death kind of drove me back into the church. And so I still maintain that fear of death because I couldn't really feel like God was on my side. The powerful entity, that all loving, all powerful entity. I felt that all power of God that was not on my side, that was shaking his head, looking at me in disappointment, rolling his eyes. So I wasn't willing to, lay myself open to God's will because I was afraid what that guy was going to let me do. He was going to ask me. He was going to make me, I was sure, he was going to make me go work in the inner city where I'd be in danger all the time. He was going to make me go to China or, some hostile environment like that. I was pretty sure that that was, in the cards for me. So I never had trust in that higher power for me. So when the fears started to subside, when I started to get recovery, when I started to act as if I was a person who didn't have that fear, and I heard a speaker talk about, how his favorite mechanic for his car moved away. And so he heard about another mechanic, and he had no idea how he was going to treat his car until he took his car to them. And it worked out. So he felt comfortable taking him back again. So I acted as if my higher power cared about me and was going to help me through my fears. And when that worked out, it gave me the confidence to try it again. And that gave me the confidence to try it even more. And so now at this point, it's if I get even an inkling of fear, it's like, no, it's God's world. It's God's world. So, it is a whole different frame of reference. And my view of my higher power now is not just all powerful, but also all loving. All powerful is scary, but when you couple that with all loving, then that's a combination that I can bring down the temperature. I can bring down the stress. And I have seen it now happen time and time again. Things that I thought were going to be absolutely terrible. Turns out I don't know squat. I just don't even know. And so because of that, I can wait and see. It replaces the fear with the curiosity of how God's going to work this out. And I can have peace around that now. And I tell you, sometimes a check shows up just when it needs to. When I first joined program, I had a terrible fear of finances, and I came in January. The following December, we had absolutely no money for Christmas, no money for the mortgage, no money for food. How is this going to work out? I chose curiosity. I decided God's got all the money. I kept hearing that in multiple meetings. God's got all the money. From my religious training, God owns the cattle on a thousand hills. God can take care of this. And darned if we didn't get checks dropping out of the sky. I was getting rebates for things we had put in 4 years ago. I was getting refunds of things that I had no right to expect. I was getting bonuses at work, and that made that December possible. So, and that's one of a billion things that have happened since then. And so now I really don't have fears. I don't have fears. There's nothing I can look at. And it's not an easy life. Living with a traumatic brain injury person, not an easy life. Didn't know how I was going to do that. Hey, somehow it happened. I've done knee surgery. I have a knee replacement. Didn't know how that was going to work out. It worked out. He was full on drinking at that time. I didn't die. He didn't kill me. For some reason, he, stepped up and made sure I got fed because I couldn't make it to the kitchen. So, it just, I have no reason to expect that it's not going to work out. So, and even in my worst circumstances, it's teaching me to rely on my higher power, and that's worth its weight in gold right there. So, what else?
Thank you. Do you ever feel sorry for yourself and like you quote, deserve a non-abstinent food?
I would have to say that self-pity is something I'm dealing with right now because it has come up and I didn't even know. I didn't even know that was one of my defects, but it's come up in spades that, because I have not lost the last of the weight. So what I've done is I've maintained the 135 pounds that I've lost. So that's a win on one hand, but I'm not a normal weight yet. And I know it's not time, and I should be eating in order to lose weight. And this is like brand new learning for me, duh. Sometimes I'm kind of slow on the uptake, right? So, but self-pity is part of that. Poor me, I, poor me, poor me, pour me another hot chocolate, right? So. It's sugar-free hot chocolate, but I hear people are doing not doing sugar-free stuff, and I'm thinking, how can you take that away from me? I don't deserve to have that. Just the same, And I'll sneak in excess food, more food than I need to eat, and I need to get honest with that. So that is something I'm working with, even right now. Right this minute, I'm working on it. So, I've got a sponsor taking my food and my calorie count, and she's, boy, she's being kind of a bitch about it. So, it's like, damn it. She's really good for me and really holds me accountable. I love that about her. So, we are working on that right now. So,
Thank you. And probably last question. Can you reflect on the spiritual awakening as the result of these steps?
I can, because really, I was in, so Orange County has this morning meeting called Sunrise, and every day we were reading the 11th step every day. Consider your plans for the day. I meditate now on, that I be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And I meditate on what does not self-seeking look like? Well, that's compassion and love. What does not being dishonest mean? It means being brutally honest with yourself. What does, not having self-pity look like? It looks like, I have a self-awareness and a compassion for myself. I have a acceptance of myself as I am, and that's no longer self-pity. So the spiritual awakening is a constant listening for my higher power, a constant reframing everything that happens into, well, this must be the way it needs to be right now. And let's wait and see what's going to happen. And it has completely. I can sit in my church now and hear program from the pulpit. And when I go to meetings, I can hear the pulpit from my recovery. So that has been the spiritual awakening in my life. So I have a very, a life-changing relationship with my higher power now, and I never had that 40 years sitting in pews. I never had that. So, and I do now. So, thanks.
Thank you so much, Carla, for your share and for the Q&A and everything. Thanks so much for being here.